This is Shabbat HaGadol, the great Sabbath, although no one knows for sure exactly why the Shabbat before Pesach is called Shabbat HaGadol. But one of the theories is that it was the Shabbat on which the rabbi gave a very, very long drasha, because the rabbi would talk about all the things you are and are not allowed to do on Pesach, and that takes a long time. And I'm not going to give a very, very long drasha or even talk about the things that you are and are not allowed to do on Pesach, but I am going to take this opportunity to teach rather than to just speak. And I want to talk about three things on Pesach, not what Rabban Gamliel says, not Pesach, matzah, and maror, but why we say what we say, why we open the door for Elijah, and why we have a Haggadah. Now, if you have a pew bulletin, you can look in the very back and you will see the passage that forms the central part of the Haggadah, what we say, Arami Oved Avi, a wandering Aramean or perhaps a lost or destroyed Aramean, was my father. And it says what you're supposed to do if you look at the back, when you come into the land, and you receive the land, and you bring your first fruits, you make this declaration. I declare that God has come to the land and sworn, given us, a wandering Aramean was my father. He came down to Egypt and were few in number and became a great, mighty, and populous nation. And the Egyptians treated us harshly and humiliated us, and we cried to God, and God saw our affliction, our toil, our oppression, and brought us out of Egypt with signs and wonders. Now you realize that this is a summary of Israelite history. It's as if on April 15th, you came to the IRS office and you said, the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock and they built settlements and then we developed a nation and we fought against the British and we had a civil war and we fought in the World War I and II, and therefore, because this country has given me freedom, I now pay my taxes. Not what happens on April 15th, but it's the same thing, because you make this declaration, according to the Bible, right before you give the first fruits, the Bikurim. And to whom do you give the first fruits? Where do you bring it? The temple. And it is like taxes, because the first fruits that you bring are eaten, those are eaten by the priests. And the priests, who don't own any property, who just run the temple, they get fed by the sacrifices of the people, and in return, they run the temple for you. It's like taxes. They make sure that the house of God is in good repair, and in order to pay them for that, you bring your bikurim. But here's the curious thing. This passage that I just read you, that is in your Haggadah, and by the way, most of the Haggadah, I don't know what percentage, 60% say, maybe more, is strictly an interpretation of this one passage. For pages, we interpret this passage. This passage, which is the heart of the Haggadah, is from where? What book of the Bible? Deuteronomy. Now, why is it, scholars have asked for generations, that you don't pick a passage from Exodus? That's when it happened. What are you doing picking a passage from Deuteronomy? And do you know when you bring the Bikurim? When do you bring the first fruits? If you get this right, you're really good. Shavuot, that's right. Who said that? Yay, Lila Dwoskin gets an extra box of matzah. So, you bring the first fruits on Shavuot. So why are you reading a passage that isn't from Exodus, where you bring, that relates, by the way, not to Pesach, but to Shavuot, and making it the centerpiece of Pesach? There are a lot of answers to this question. One possibility is that since people said it every year, the passage was familiar to them. Because remember, for most of Jewish history, Jews didn't have books. When you sat down to do the Pesach Seder, you had to do it from memory. And so one or two people would remember the passage because they said it every year, so they knew it, and the rabbis wanted to pick a passage that everyone knew. Another possibility is that it's a passage that you can interpret, because we are an interpretive tradition and we like to take bits of the Torah and make them much longer than they are, to tell stories about them, to interpret them. But here's the answer that I like best and that I think has the most meaning, which is, you could pick a passage from Exodus, but the passage from Exodus would refer to the people who were there. By the time you get to Deuteronomy, everyone who experienced Yetziat Mitzrayim, who experienced the Exodus from Egypt, with the exception of Moshe and Kalev and Yehoshua, everyone else was gone. They died in the desert. Remember, God says, I'm bringing a new generation into the land. So they pick a passage that speaks to people who didn't experience Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. Why? Because for the rest of Jewish history, the passage has to speak to us, and none of us were there. Bechol dor vador, in every generation, the Haggadah tells us, Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo, everybody has to see himself or herself, ki'ilu hu yatza me'eretz Mitzrayim, as if he went out of the land of Egypt, but he didn't. And the only way that you can simulate that is if you pick a passage from the Torah that speaks to people even in the Torah who weren't there, because we don't know what it was like to be there. And so you build the Haggadah around this idea that you can feel what it's like to be somewhere you never were. And that's why we do Arami Oved Avi as the central piece. That's one. We'll return to this at the end, which is point three, why we have a Haggadah. But the second is, why do you open the door for Elijah? And I want to say two things about that. The first is, why Elijah? Well, three. Why Elijah? Because in the Bible, Elijah is one of two people who does not die, whom we are told explicitly does not die, right? Elijah goes off to heaven in a fiery chariot. By the way, if you know the other person who doesn't die in the Bible, you get two boxes of matzah. Anyone else? No? Who doesn't die? Very, very early on, at the beginning of Bereishit. I couldn't hear, but the answer, what's that? I didn't. Well, it's actually, right. No, it's Elijah who goes up in the chariot. He drops the coat for Elisha. Enosh doesn't die. Enosh, at the very beginning. Enosh also, it says, Enosh walked with God. It never says that he doesn't die. Now, there are lots of people that we aren't told died. Lots of people, right? We're never told lots of, but specifically that they went up to heaven, we only have Enosh and Elijah, okay? And therefore, Elijah's gonna come back. Since he didn't die, he may as well come back. He's the one. And he's gonna come back to do what? To announce the coming of the Messiah. But why on Pesach? Because every time we pray for Elijah to return at the end of Shabbat, there's a reason. At the end of, at the Brit Milah, there's a reason. At the end of Yom Kippur, there's a reason. So what's the reason for Pesach? What's the reason for Pesach? By the way, the end of Shabbat, you know, after Havdalah, you sing Eliyahu Hanavi? My favorite reason for that, it may not be the only one, but my favorite reason for that is mathematics. You see, let's say Elijah could come any day of the week, and there are 7 days in the week. The one day we know he can't come is Shabbat, because the chariot doesn't work on Shabbat. Right? So if he's going to come on Shabbat, if the lottery fell on Shabbat, when's he going to come? The moment Shabbat is over, right? So there's a good mathematical reason why. The reason Elijah is scheduled to come on Pesach is, in the Talmud, there's a debate. Are there four terms for redemption in the Pesach story, or five terms? And in the Talmud, when you don't know the answer to something, you say teku, which means, like in modern Hebrew, teku is a draw, or in chess, teku is a stalemate. In other words, we can't decide this. We don't know. We have to wait for messianic times. And the rabbis say teku stands for Tishbi. Who's the Tishbi? Elijah, Eliyahu HaTishbi. Tishbi yitaretz will solve kushiyot ubayot, our problems and our difficulties. In other words, we don't know if it's four or five, but we know who knows. Elijah knows, and when Elijah comes, he's going to tell us. If Elijah drinks the fifth cup, we know there are five terms for redemption, because you drink one for each. If he comes into the house and says, leave it, we know there are four. But either way, Elijah has to come in and let us know, because otherwise we won't know. The question, of course, is why you have to open the door. I mean, this is Elijah who goes off to heaven in a chariot. He can't find a way in if you don't, you know. Elijah was going to come this year, forgot to open the door. Redemption has to wait. But of course, the idea is that the Jewish people have to invite redemption in, have to welcome redemption, have to show that they're ready for redemption, so they open the door so Elijah can come in. So first, we have to simulate an experience that is not ours, and we have to be ready to invite redemption in. Now, why do we have a Haggadah at all? Because a Haggadah means telling. And I was actually thinking about this when I was looking at the Torah portion for today, which is all about what holiday? What did today's Torah portion talk about? Anyone know? Yom Kippur. Right, good. Somebody was looking at the Torah portion. It was all about Yom Kippur. And there was a nice comment on the bottom of the Eitz Chaim from Rav Soloveitchik, who says, feeling sorry has no, there's no comparison to feeling sorry and saying what you did. To verbalize what you did takes it to a completely different level. Everybody knows that you can feel sorry, but to actually say to someone, I did this and I did that and I'm sorry, is much harder. Because to speak the words is a completely different experience from thinking the thought. And that's one of the reasons why the confessional in the Jewish tradition is always out loud, right? We beat our chests and we say out loud, we did this. You can say it softly, but you have to say the words. The same thing's true with stories and memory. If you remember something, it's a completely different experience from telling the story of what you remember. And the Haggadah is not so much about memory as it is about storytelling. You have to tell the story. You know this, by the way, if you have a child who has a favorite book, why do you have to read the darn thing? They know every single word, right? As soon as you start to read, they say it with you. But you have to say it because telling it is different from remembering it. And not only that, but each year you tell the Haggadah to a different audience, even if you have a Seder with the same people, because you're not the same person you were last year, or the year before that. And so the telling changes even if you say the same thing, because all of us change each year. So really the Seder is about recreating an experience that we weren't a part of, making sure that we welcome redemption and learning how to tell our story again and again, each year new, because it's an eternal story for an eternal people. Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach.